Rewind is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wiseye.org/donate or text WISEYE to 44321. This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, a judge is set to rule whether Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban is enforceable after the Evers administration files a lawsuit seeking to protect women's rights.
Today I'm announcing that we're taking this fight back to the courts.
Plus, the state's high court rules the DNR chair can stay in his position in a far-reaching decision that leaves Governor Evers powerless in trying to seat his appointees. And we'll have you covered on all the highlights from the state Democratic convention, which largely focused on Ron Johnson and abortion rights. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 1st.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's first talk about what was kind of expected, I guess you can say, after Roe was overturned last week. We knew the state was going to take some action. Well, they did earlier this week. Attorney General Josh Call and Governor Evers filed a lawsuit asking a Dane County judge basically to overturn the 1849 abortion ban that's on the books that would ban the procedures unless a mother's life is at risk. Call was arguing that those laws are outdated, therefore claim that abortions remain legal here in Wisconsin, but we still have to just wait for a judge to determine that. Of course, Republicans slammed the lawsuit. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said abortion is not health care, therefore the governor and attorney general can't try to use the courts to enact law. It is just wrong. Let's first hear from Attorney General Josh Call at his press conference earlier this week, and then we'll kind of dive into the weeds of where this lawsuit might go next.
Now, Governor Evers and I have taken decisive action in the last few days to minimize the harm from the Supreme Court's decision. Governor Evers has made clear that he will grant clemency in cases in which people are prosecuted under the old ban. My office has been clear that we will not use our resources to investigate or prosecute anybody under Wisconsin's 19th century ban. In fact, when those bans were in place, abortion was commonplace, but the laws were very rarely enforced, and they were disparately enforced. So we have contended that those laws, because of the history of limited enforcement and the fact that they haven't been enforced for more than 50 years, no longer can be in effect in Wisconsin. So today we have filed a lawsuit that asks the courts to clarify that Wisconsin's 19th century abortion ban is not in effect.
So this was filed in Dane County Court. I think we all expect it to end up in the state Supreme Court to make a final decision. But it really remains to be seen if this lawsuit really carries a lot of weight to it. Some legal experts I talked to this week doesn't think it stands a chance. Others, of course, on the liberal side are really hopeful that the court, and we have Justice Hagedorn that has been really on both sides of the aisle on many different issues. So I guess everyone's just waiting in anticipation.
Yeah, so two things about the lawsuit. One, it argues that the laws passed since 1849 supersede that ban. So, for example, 2015, Republicans passed a ban on abortion for 20 weeks. That's a new law. They're arguing that supersedes it. Two, there are other laws passed since 1849 would have other exceptions, like for the health of the mother or for rape or incest. So, therefore, they're arguing there's a conflict and it superseded. Again, not a lawyer, don't know the chances of that lawsuit succeeding, but it shows that Call and Evers are doing something. Mm-hmm. And that is something that Democrats are looking for, because this was a gut punch for Democrats I've talked to about. They knew the decision was coming, but once it came down, it like actually hit. And it was, you could feel that kind of like sense at the Dem convention this past weekend of, okay, this is real, it's really happened. And there's a sense of dissatisfaction with President Biden, because he's been limited, restrained in what he's trying to do. Tammy Baldwin, for example, has urged Biden to take executive action. Sarah Galuski, running for state U.S. Senate, said, do something, you know, take some executive action. Biden's answer has been, well, he's okay now with eliminating the filibuster to codify abortion rights. it's a change of position. It's something, but it's not anything bold. There is this feeling of, okay, the reality is Supreme Court is 6-3, controlled by conservatives. There is no obvious change of that coming anytime soon. What can we do, right? This is something. And I don't know if it's going to succeed, but it is something.
Right. And also throughout this week, too, over the weekend, Governor Tony Evers also said he would grant clemency to doctors if they are criminally charged for providing abortion. So this is kind of another thing where he's just trying to do anything in his power. I mean, of course, granting clemency is not going to be something he can do if he's not reelected, of course. But also spoke to several district attorneys across the state. Of course, we know the four Planned Parenthood abortion clinics, or they're also health care clinics as well, stop providing abortions in wake of Roe being overturned. Those are located in Dane County, Milwaukee County, Sheboygan, and one is in Green Bay, which is Brown County. We've heard from Dane and Milwaukee DAs, they will not seek to penalize or prosecute anyone or doctors under this. Sheboygan will. I talked to the DA earlier this week. He is the first in Wisconsin to basically say, I believe this is the law in the books and I will enforce it. Still have not heard from Brown County yet, haven't gotten through to them yet, but basically, if doctors perform this procedure and if they are caught, they could face up to 6 years in prison and face tens of thousands of dollars in fines.
Now, I don't get the impression from Planned Parenthood that having a clemency promise or a we won't prosecute promise is enough to restart offering abortions. That is not really an ironclad agreement or protection for them. However, it is, again, something. And Evers at the convention this past weekend, that was the high moment for the convention, was the energy when he was doing this rally and said, I'm going to do this, talk about it in personal terms. It's also putting abortion on the ballot. I still don't know if abortion is going to move people significantly this fall. I mean, gas prices, inflation, those are bigger issues that are really driving voters right now. And the numbers we saw for Joe Biden, the Marquette poll last week. At the same time, could this issue have a ripple effect? What I mean by that is, talking to Democrats this week, I heard the kind of take of, okay, people who normally turn out to vote regularly, that they're known voters, they're now calling us saying, I want to do something. I want to make phone calls. I want to write checks.
I want to volunteer.
I want to help. What do I do? Well, they could help get other people out. Is it enough, though, in the headwind? I mean, Joe Biden is upside down with independents by 41 points in the Marquette poll. That is bad, really, really bad. I don't know if this is enough, but it's the Democrats saying, okay, we have an issue we can really put out there, especially with suburban college-educated women. We've seen this phenomenon the last several years with President Trump, where they left the Republican Party. They were reliable GOP voters because of taxes, schools, things like that. Trump turned them off. They moved away from the party. They voted for Biden in 2020 to get away from the craziness. Now they're going, okay, it's costing more to fill up my car, groceries are higher. Can you keep them in the fold for Democrats because of this issue? Maybe, but it remains to be seen.
All right. And also just want to mention as well, we saw 38 Assembly Republicans this week give Governor Tony Evers a letter basically requesting him to allocate $10 million in ARPA funding for crisis pregnancy centers. I think we all know that Governor Evers is not going to generally accept that request. The crisis pregnancy centers are a little controversial. They've been kind of known to not have licensed professionals in them, sending kind of misinformation to some women. This is just what history has shown. And Governor Evers has sole authority over those ARPA funds. And as we know, in the past, he's never handed out any of this money to any Republican priorities. Also election year, so I think we can safe to say that it's not going to happen. But Republicans were arguing, well, maybe if you want to work together, here's our offer, but kind of politics at its moment.
Remember, ARPA funds are supposed to be used to recover from the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how providing funding to a pregnancy crisis center in the wake of Roe v. Wade helps recover from the COVID pandemic. That said, states have used the money in creative ways, is one way to put it, that maybe doesn't quite meet the criteria laid out by the feds, but I don't think it's going anywhere.
Republican candidates for governor also held their first debate in Green Bay earlier this week, and all of them vowed to uphold the 1849 abortion ban, which would only allow abortions, like I mentioned, to save a mother's life. And this isn't anything typically new. We've kind of known all of their positions, but kind of one of the big headlines there is that Tim Michaels did not show up. He instead decided to go to a campaign event. Let's first just hear from the candidates that were there, their views on abortion, and then we'll kind of break it down from there.
I'm elated beyond measure that the Supreme Court of the United States followed the Constitution and gave the rights back to the state. It's a federalism-related matter, and we have control. I'm glad we have our statute on the book, 940.04, and I'm glad that's on the books. It's going to maintain that abortion can't be performed in our state.
I am overjoyed and relieved because I have fought my entire adult life for this moment to actually happen. It is a time for us in the pro-life movement to rejoice and celebrate the fact that we are the party who can be pro-life, which means being pro-woman and pro-baby. And I will lead with both empathy and compassion and keep the 1849 law on the books to protect the unborn in Wisconsin.
I am elated that the court did the right thing. Ultimately, the 1973 court that decided Roe versus Wade invented a right to abortion that simply did not exist. As your governor, I want to make sure that every last cent that still finds its way from the state of Wisconsin to Planned Parenthood is shifted over to those pregnancy resource centers to protect innocent life.
So like I mentioned kind of before leading into hearing from all those candidates that Tim Michaels was absent, kind of was an opportunity for Nicholson, Rebecca Clayfish, and Tim Rantham to take shots at Michaels for not going there. One thing that I thought was a highlight too, and I guess it's probably nothing new because I've asked the candidates the same thing, is that no one would answer whether they believe the election was stolen from Trump in 2020. The host of the debate asked them multiple times, yes or no. No one wanted to answer it, so that's
Rantham
just...
Did. Yes.
Rantham did, excuse me. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even have that on my notes. But, yeah, that's still just something that I think they're all watching. They're kind of walking a fine line on because they don't want to upset some of their base, and some of them want to be a little bit more extreme than they actually are.
Interesting decision by Michaels. On the one hand, he's got momentum. But Marquette poll, I've told you, not my favorite for primary polling. Love what Charles Franklin does with that poll for general elections. But in a primary... You start with the general election audience and trying to figure out a primary electorate. Not the best way to do it. That said, Michaels has momentum. So it might be a case for Michaels of saying, okay, there's no upside for me to go into this debate forum and let them take shots at me and risk some gaffe. It's better to go to this rally and kind of keep riding this wave of ads I'm running. At the same time, you have now irritated a Green Bay talk show host, which he doesn't have the same reach as some of the guys in Milwaukee do. Mm-hmm. Or Vicky McKenna, but he does have some reach in the Green Bay market. Now, regular Joe is going to be on you for the rest of the campaign, complaining about you not showing up. So that was kind of an interesting decision, but you can't deny Michaels has momentum. What I'm noticing is Clayfish has been taking shots at him for a while, but they're ramping up. And oh, by the way, this PAC backing Clayfish, it's starting a TV ad buy on July 6th, $1.2 million to the August 9th primary. I will bet you money, Emily, it's not a positive ad about Emily. Rebecca Clayfish. Right. It's going to be taking shots at Michaels because they have to do something to blunt Michaels' momentum. Either he is really tied with Clayfish or maybe even eking ahead, or he's getting there. They have to do something to change the dynamic. Now, challenge for Michaels is, can he keep the trajectory going? And how does he take a punch? Does he have the wherewithal to withstand some attacks? Last time he debated anybody was in 2004. It's Russ Feingold.
Right.
There's a debate coming up in July that we're co-sponsoring, Milwaukee Media. I want to see how is Michaels doing that debate. If there is a stumble, that could be a lasting impression for people. So by missing this debate, he missed the chance to kind of sharpen his skills with a radio, you know, no offense to like a radio debate that's posted on YouTube. It's different than a statewide audience for a debate that could be, you know, the last impression they have of you outside your TV ads. In the primary.
Right. I was just going to say he hasn't debated in a very, very long time. And, you know, I've interviewed him once or twice now, and he's very cautious, I could tell, by his demeanor on what he wants to say compared to a Rebecca Clayfish who will, you know, kind of just wing it as she goes. I mean, she's very polished. She knew how to – she was a TV reporter as well, so I got to give her credit there. So that is something that a lot of people are going to be looking forward to. I believe it's the end of July that debate that TMJ in Milwaukee is going to be co-sponsoring with you guys. Another – Big news this week is the DNR, chair will remain in his post after the state Supreme Court basically said that he can stay there on the DNR board until the GOP-controlled state Senate confirms his successor, despite his term expiring more than a year ago. And this really sets some precedent, JR, that, you know, when I was thinking about it in general, too, do elections even matter, right? I mean, the governor was elected. He should be allowed to pick who serves on these boards. But the state Supreme Court says, well, there's a process in place and the Senate doesn't do it. Too bad.
This wasn't a surprise because in 1964, the state Supreme Court reached a similar conclusion. And Annette Ziegler, the Chief Justice, writing the majority opinion, said that decision was as sound today as it was 60 years ago. The implication, though, is quite far-reaching because that the DNR board, Walker appointees remain majority 4-3 on the 7-member board. Prehn continues to serve indefinitely, as long as he wants, essentially. The Tech College board, there are three Walker appointees whose terms expired in May of 2021, continue to serve. Now, that board's not doing diminish the Tech College System board, but this is a more high-profile situation where the DNR board is dealing with wolf hunts, PFAS regulations. They are hindering what Evers wants to do with these big picture things. The state Senate, Republicans will argue, look, if Evers wants an appointee confirmed, he should work with us, find a consensus candidate. Now, if you drew a Venn diagram, however, of the people that Evers wants on the DNR board and that Senate Republicans want the DNR board, I don't think you'll find many people in that little area that crosses in the middle. Very, very narrow stripe of people who might meet the qualifications. Also, don't forget the UW Board of Regents. 9 of Evers' 11 picks have not been confirmed. Look, the Senate is going to argue, we are doing our job. It's advising consent. We get a role in this process. We're not going to give Evers free rein. The business community doesn't want Evers' picks to run the DNR board because they're afraid of like what they might try to do and the cost it would impose upon them to follow his procedures. That said, if you're an institutionalist, there's another example of how the Capitol doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. It is raw political power, and Senate Republicans are saying, look, we hold the cards. We're not going to give in to you on this. And oh, by the way, often in politics, what holds you back from doing something that maybe crosses a line or gets close to it is the fact that, okay, someday on the road, they might do it to us. Think about the state Senate right now. There is no viable path for Democrats to win back the majority if there's a Republican in office, right, in the governor's office. Yeah, maybe a wave year if there's an incumbent Republican, maybe. The maps don't really have a clear path to majority. Can you imagine right now Democrats being able to hold up a governor's picks for anything? No. And yeah. Republicans know that. There's no price to pay down the road if they do this. So,
all right. Let's move on to the Democratic State Convention. Definitely have to recap that. You were there over the weekend. It was held in La Crosse. I think the big two themes as we talked about a little bit earlier, where of course it comes days after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe. So that was a huge theme that we heard from candidates on. Also, Ron Johnson was the biggest target. We know that Democrats are outspending him quite a lot. They've been running ads for a very long time targeting him as well. Let's just take a listen. This was actually from Governor Evers. He kind of had a speech as well, trying to, I guess, we kind of showed some raw emotions of talking about his family and how upset he was overall about the high court's decision. Let's take a listen.
There's a personal issue here. I have 7 grandkids that are girls or young women. Yesterday, they were made second-class citizens. That's bullshit. This next election is critical.
So most of the attacks were with the, at least U.S. Senate candidates, were not at each other, mm-hmm. all really centered on Ron Johnson. No big surprise there, but it's going to be interesting to see when we're going to start maybe seeing some shots fired. We saw some Tom Nelson ads going against Alex Lazary for his ties to the Bucks Stadium and taxpayers paying for a portion of that. So I don't know. Might happen in the next few weeks, but no big surprise themes, no. I guess you can say here.
Lazary had a new poll out this week showing that he is still within margin of error with Barnes. As I've said many times, the best polling done sometimes is done by the campaigns. The numbers I trust the least are from the campaigns. They show me the best picture they want, right? They're the ones that set the criteria of how the poll is done. When talking to people, it's clear that Mandela is still the front runner. Lazary has spent almost $8 million on TV. Galuski is north of $2 million. The question is, How are they going to change the trajectory of that race right now to take Mandela out of the lead spot? Now, Lazary folks will tell you, hey, we're on the right trajectory. We are going to overtake him naturally with this positive ad campaign. Not sure that's true. And talking to folks, they notice that Galuski and Lazary are kind of like playing a cat and mouse game. Who's going to take the shot? Because if you go after Mandela, you risk driving up your negatives. There's this kind of protective sense among Democrats about all they don't like attacks. They don't want to see this stuff. The bad thing for them is if you don't attack Mandela Barnes about the obvious baggage, I mean, holding an abolished ICE t-shirt,
yeah,
the unpaid taxes, the parking tickets, et cetera. If you don't attack him on that now, he doesn't sharpen his message to blow back on that stuff because guess what? Republicans, they're not going to hold back. If Barnes is the nominee on August 10th, you're going to see tack ad for tack ad going after him. The race will become, do you hate Mandela Barnes at least or Ron Johnson at least? It won't be a very uplifting race.
Right.
All right? So, but they're holding back because there's the blowback you could get from that. So we'll see how that goes out. Convention, interesting in that they run the cross. There just wasn't the energy there was in Middleton with the Republicans. Now, for a couple of reasons. One, you're in La Crosse, no offense to La Crosse. Probably went to school there, but you're not in the top media market in the state. It's hard to get to. If you're in Milwaukee, you're talking a 3.5-hour drive to get out there, whereas Madison's more centrally located. If you are a delegate, you can not only watch the
online.
Vertical or virtually, mm-hmm, you can participate, you can vote. Not in our straw poll, but you can, you know, participate. All kinds of reasons that kind of like there just wasn't that energy other than during the Evers like rally about abortion. You could feel that like kind of like that yes moment for Democrats. And after that it was kind of like a, oh man, we got punched in the gut with that decision, yeah, on Friday. Interesting to note, this convention came years after they met in suburban Milwaukee the day of a Madison federal judge overturning the state's ban on gay marriage. So that was a celebration of that federal decision. This was kind of like a, okay, how are we going to respond to this?
Very somber atmosphere,
yeah,
when I was
again,
watching online, yeah.
Between all those factors, it doesn't help. Plus, Republicans had, you know, the vote for endorsements, brought more energy. They also have a division, right? Because they had resolutions to condemn Robin Voss, resolutions over calling for decertifying the rejection results. There's a split there that wasn't the Democrat. So, yeah, but less energy at this convention than the Republican one for sure.
All right, let's move on to stock picks this week. Rising is state revenues.
Yeah, so you know I'm a numbers geek. Mm-hmm. I was cool in high school, Emily, I swear to you. But when it comes to numbers, redistricting, and elections, I'm pretty dorky. But, okay, I looked at the May collections from partner revenue. We have collected almost $2.4 billion the first 11 months of the fiscal year on corporate taxes alone. We were able to get that for the full 12 months. Well, that's okay. It's only one more month. However, corporations make estimated payments 4 months of the year. June's a big one. We're going to have a big corporate tax collection number this year. We're seeing right now tax collections are up 5.2% for the general fund year over date, right? The first 11 months. We're supposed to be down 3.2% from the year before. So we're on trajectory for a good number. Now, there's some downside to that. For example, sales tax collections, they're up in part because we're paying more for products, right? The more cost there is, the higher the taxes on it. So that's not so great. There's also maybe recession on the horizon. There's some issues there. So Republicans I talked to, they are not going to rush to spend this right away. Remember, Evers wanted to do the rebate. That's, mm-hmm, that time has passed. What I'm watching is how much of a boost is this going to be? Now, oh, by the way, Medicaid fund, even bigger surplus we thought it was going to be so far. So that's another good. How much are we going to have in the till at the end of the day? And what they do with it. Now, if you're a Democrat, you want to invest in education. You feel like schools are still getting the shaft. The UW system has, you know, been hurt for a long time. Republicans are eyeing tax cuts. No surprise. The question is, do they go flat tax or eliminate the income tax? My bet right now is that if Republicans have full control of both houses and the governor's office, you will see a flat tax of some sort in the first budget from the new Republican governor. There will be political fallout from that because a flat tax benefits the wealthy more than anybody else, right? Because we have a high top tax rate, four brackets right now. That highest one is 6 or 7%.
Yep.
That's going to benefit people, make more money. But if you do it early in the term, it dissipates by the time they go to re-election 4 years and all that kind of good stuff. So watch that. I don't think they'll go to limit the income tax entirely. Maybe you'll see like a step-by-step process where they get a flat tax first, and if it goes well, start ramping it down more and more until they can eliminate it.
All right, mix this week, the power grid.
So a couple of regulators would say, hey, we could have blackouts in the Midwest. This week, Alan Novak, who's a GOP appointee to the Public Service Commission, said, not so fast. Like, yes, if we have a perfect storm of everything goes wrong, we could have blackouts. Don't think it's going to happen. For example, we had a couple of power plants that were supposed to go online, did not. But some coal-fired plants are not coming offline just yet. So she thinks we have a decent amount of capacity that will be okay, but the threat is still out there.
I'm also going to throw in a mixed here, too, because of the U.S. Supreme Court decision yesterday targeting the EPA, which basically really restricts their ability to combat climate change. It was, of course, a lot of victory, or not, I guess, some Republicans who have doubts that climate change is real were touting it. But meanwhile, you know, clean energy groups that I talked to said this is a huge blow to them. Yep. And it really hinders their ability to really tackle what, especially what the Biden administration has been trying to do for a very long time to combat global warming. All right. Falling this week, Doug La Follette, who was still in Africa during the Dem convention. I hope he had a good time.
So look, straw polls are what they are. We put a lot of work into our straw polls, but they are a survey of the base of the base, all right? That said, a lot of the base wants Doug La Follette gone. So the other straw poll, Alexia Saber, who is a Dane County Democratic Party chair, running against him in the primary, won the straw poll going away. Interesting side note, in the four races we asked about, a woman won all four except for the Senate race, and Sarah Galuski lost by 2 votes to Mandela Barnes. That might be a Roe thing. It, you know, might be like a voters looking for somebody to talk authentically about abortion, about gun violence, that may be an attraction. There may be other factors there, too. La Follette lost a straw poll back in 2006 to Scott Ross, the activist, but he then went on and beat Scott like 75% of the vote in the fall primary. What I'm wondering now is La Follette name good enough anymore? Doug La Follette is not really using that office as a platform to push a Democratic message or a big, bold message. He's kind of viewed as a caretaker in that office. That's not a great thing to Democrats. Been around for a long time. He actually won in 1974, after I was born. So he's been in office for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But he's also the bulkhead against Republicans moving powers over to elections to the Secretary of State's office. So if Republicans win that office in the November election, you could see a window where either you'll see some calls to have that office in charge of elections or have a role with
more
the
of a say,
Elections
yeah.
Commission. If La Follette's there, they're not going to do that. So if you're a Democratic voter in the primary, what do you do? The primary, look, no offense to Saber's campaign, but think about like what's out there right now. There is a contested U.S. Senate primary on the ballot in August. That's going to suck up all the Democratic energy. If you're running in a primary for Secretary of State, how do you communicate a message to people who you are and get out there? Yeah, and I don't want to say $100,000 is not a big deal, but it's not in communicating to voters. You have to run a great, almost perfect, flawless campaign that communicates just the right amount of people about who you are to beat La Follette because he has a golden name in politics, Wisconsin politics. Okay, let's say La Follette gets past that. In November, is it enough, right? It was in 2010. He won re-election despite a red wave. If it is not Doug La Follette on the ballot for Democrats come November, you're talking about that race being a pure, generic ballot contest. Again, no offense to Secretary of State or State Treasurer. But those offices get lost in the shuffle of a U.S. Senate race, governor's race, attorney general. It's a pure contest, a generic ballot contest, unless you're La Follette. People know the name. They've known it for a long time. So that's kind of like the yin and yang of Doug La Follette being on the ballot. But, yeah, he's kind of mailing it in. I mean, people will say he doesn't really work for hard in general in campaigns. He hasn't raised a lot of money in a long time. But taking a month-long trip to Africa in the middle of a primary election is kind of an interesting decision.
Right, it's definitely an interesting decision. And we haven't really seen him out on a campaign trail. He had one press conference to announce his reelection where he kind of just said, I'm here to uphold, you know, to make sure Republicans don't take over elections. But we haven't really heard that from him as a grand messaging out there talking to voters. Of course, he's a little bit on the older side, like you said. It was, he's been in office for a very long time. But also from Saber, too, we're not hearing any of those messagings quite yet. Meanwhile, Republicans are are running. There's a few of them that are trying to seek hold of that office. And it's like we've said before, we don't really see campaign ads for state treasurer or for secretary of state, but maybe after the primary we do, because it might matter to people a little bit more when it comes to who oversees the elections, because we know a lot of people are still talking about that on both sides of the aisle.
There's a national effort underway to protect Democrats or to try and prevent, kind of like stop the steel cans from winning mm-hmm. those offices. Now in Wisconsin, our office doesn't have anything to do with elections. I mean, it has very few powers left, period. That's been stripped over years and years and years. But you might see some effort to try and prevent a Republican from winning because of what could happen. I don't know about that. For Republicans, you have someone like Jay Schrader, who is somebody who said basically, I wouldn't certify the election. Like he's saying, I would have certified it happened in 2020, all that kind of good stuff. I think Republicans would rather see Amy Loudenbeck win, state representative from Clinton. She's a member of the Finance Committee. She might be the first kind of like person to run for that office a long time, can raise good money, and has kind of like got establishment ties, who could give Doug LaFollette a run if they're on the ballot in November. I'm not sure who's going to get through these primaries, but that'll be a fascinating race to watch. And if anybody pays attention to it, who's going to talk about that race in light of what else is happening on the ballot?
Right, absolutely. All right, well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for watching. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a fun and safe holiday weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.